Welcome back to the Vault of Silliness. Before we get to today's wonderful installment, I wanted to remind everyone here at the top of the show to please like, subscribe, and share from whichever service you use to enter the vault every week. And I could really use your support. Please consider joining Patreon. The link is below. Every little bit helps, and a percentage will be donated in Norm's name to a scholarship fund at the Berklee College of Music here in Boston. To those that have subscribed, thank you. Alrighty, we have ourselves a Norm Nathan Show dumb birthday game from August 10th, 1996. The title for this stupendous moment in broadcasting history is The Ad-Libbing Genius. Norm is at his finest with ad-libbing songs, names, and dramatic stories. We begin with the great caller, Joel, talking bad movies and great jazz. A lot of names are mentioned throughout, so listen closely. It's super entertaining and informative. Then it's on to the dumb birthday game. But before even that begins, Norm and Jack ruminate on all things traffic. The players. Jack Hart. Eleanor in Toms River, New Jersey. Bonnie in Ohio. Karen from Brockton. Bruce from Attleboro. And Tom Howie producing and playing in studio. The birthdays, Eddie Fisher, Rosanna Arquette, Rhonda Fleming, Jimmy Dean, and Patty Austin. Post-game calls, Susan talking cooking, cookbooks, and words that rhyme with chicken. Wolfie talking lottery and horse racing. Leo on Jimmy Dean and the Muppets. Charlie talking about farms, Sandy's ice cream, and the theremin. Frank praising Norm and his influence on the jazz culture in Boston. And Warren from Gloucester, who had sent postcards from Montana. Episode 196, The Ad-Libbing Genius, giggles its way to your ears in 3, 2, and 1.
Western ever made.
I remember I interviewed Medved, Michael Medved. There were the two Medved brothers, I guess, weren't there, who wrote the book? And Michael, is he the one who's still on? And he's gotten very moral and stuff about the horror of Hollywood's immorality and stuff.
They were like kids when they wrote that book.
Yeah, they were still either at Harvard or just out of Harvard. They, because they went to school here in Cambridge, and I remember reading about that one, and also he had the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes was another one. All those kind of movies was in it. Yes.
There was one that they cited that they gave a special award to for unspecial effects called Swamp Women. And there was one scene where they were wrestling in the river with a fake alligator.
Yeah.
And it was obviously fake. And the camera, because there was no control, and they probably only shot everything once, and the camera panned up, and what you caught was the little drain of the side of the swimming pool that they were filming it in.
That's funny.
And they gave that a special award.
They would have space movies too. They were talking about, which obviously it was a dinner plate. You know, there was, they'd photograph as it was spinning around after somebody had thrown it up in the air. They put a light on it and take a shot of it. He mentioned that is a great book. I suspect it must be out of print by now because they wrote that some time ago.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, that was funny. He described a whole lot of things. The Golden Turkey Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he. Unfortunately, he's gotten terribly moral since then, but he had a sense of humor back then, and it was fun to read. I think their mother was instrumental in something, too. Maybe she lived here.
I don't know about that.
That doesn't really matter. I don't know why I even brought that up, but I remember he and his brother wrote the book, and maybe the mother sold it or something, but if it's still around, anybody who gets a kick out of really awful movies would get a kick out of it. The Golden Turkey Award book.
Well, one of the jazz group, this is really an obscure one, but in going through these records, I didn't even realize I had it, but there was a group called the Australian Jazz Quartet.
Oh, yes, yes, they did. There was one song they played on that that I used to play a lot, and I can't think of the name of that. That was the only thing I'd ever played by them, and I never heard of them after that.
Well, there was one of the more stupendous concerts I ever went to at Symphony Hall was the Brubeck Quartet, Jerry Mulligan Quartet, the Australian Jazz Quartet, and Carmen McRae.
Oh, my.
Same evening.
Oh, excellent.
Excellent. Yep, memorable.
Yeah, excellent. And you, what are you doing, getting rid of all those records?
Oh, no, I'm just getting rid of, you know, some of the things I'm not listening to, and then also going through it to look at some things, find some things that I'd forgotten I had. I have a record of Billie Holiday at Storyville.
Oh, really? Oh, my, yeah.
Which I don't know when I even got it. I don't know if I ever listened to
what,
it.
What, do you know what the label is on that?
It's not an original. I think it's a re-release, so I don't I don't have it in front of me at this second.
because there used to be a Storyville label.
It's not on the Storyville label.
Okay. As you know, that was owned by George Ween. Yeah. As a matter of fact, Arnie Ginsberg was the engineer on several of those.
Really?
I don't know whether he's a big jazz fan, because he used to play some really bad, awful music later on. But he
from the Adventure Car Hop.
Yeah, that's right. During that period, he was playing some really junky stuff, hitting car horns and whistles and all kinds of things, dressing up his program. But during that period, which was just before that, he did record for, you know, was the technical guy on the George Ween label, Storyville.
Well, during that period, I used to go Friday afternoons to Storyville, to the Teenage Jazz Club of Boston.
Oh,
John McClellan.
Oh, yes, you were part of that.
Oh, yeah.
Was Stephanie Saltman part of that, too?
Absolutely.
Son of a gun, you and I go back a bit, don't we? You don't go back as far as I do, so I'm not burdening you with that.
For our $2, we would see Carvin McRae, and we'd see the Pomeroy Band, and we'd see George Shearing. They'd come in, whoever was playing there did a set.
Oh, I forgot. What a great idea that was.
Yeah, and a lot of people got introduced to the music and hooked on the music. And, Alan Dawson and Ray Santisi and all of those people were always involved in forming bands out of the kids who came.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
To perform. That's all gone.
No, I know it. I'd forgotten all about that Teenage Jazz Club. That was something really special. Thank you for bringing that up. I just hadn't even thought about that for such a long time. Where are they now?
Sure. Okay. Well, was John McClellan? Was that?
Yes, that was John McClellan. He had a jazz show on WHDH called The Top Shelf.
Yeah.
And played a lot of good stuff. In fact, there was a song written for him, and I can't remember quite the name of it. Maybe it was called Top Shelf, although I don't think it was that. It was an interesting story about him. His real name was John Fitch. I think Fitchburg was named after his family.
Hmm.
Anyway, his name was John Fitch, and the general manager of the station at the time thought John Fitch sounded a little like too much like John Bitch or something, so he wanted him to change his name. So he took the name John McClellan, which was a McClellan was, I guess, a family name. And later on, there was an announcer came on the scene in Boston whose name was John McClellan. But he couldn't use his own name because it had already been taken by John Fitch, alias John McClellan.
I just remember a big voice and really very articulate, I'm not being very articulate here, but a really good radio voice. And then, did he go on and do...
Oh, you've been talking about John McClellan. Yeah, he had a great voice.
Did he go over to Channel 2?
Yes, he did.
He did a science.
And he became John Fitch at that point.
Then he took his... Yeah.
And he was a science reporter. That's exactly right. He was a graduate of MIT, so that was the field. You know, he obviously knew a lot about that. And he left radio. He'd left on his own, too, which is very unusual. Most people just get fired and can't get a job again.
Mm-hmm.
But the program manager there, the general manager, took off the jazz shows he was doing. And he thought, the heck with that. If they can do that to me, I don't want to be part of this business. And he left and then eventually showed up on Channel 2 as John Fitch, the science reporter. So that's you have a good memory, Joel.
Yeah, well, those were good days. Those were good radio days.
I think so. I think there was more experimentation. I think there was more adventure in the programming of things. They were willing to take chances on stuff, and I don't think that's so much the case anymore.
Well, the funniest thing was Symphony Sid.
Yeah, you're going back
who
even
would
further.
Go, he'd come. He'd be on the entire day.
Well, he'd be on a lot, and
he'd play gospel music, and he'd be Brother Sid, and then he'd play Latin, and he'd be something else, Sid, and then he'd be Symphony Sid, then he'd play the rock and roll.
I know it. He's, I think, probably the introduction to jazz to most people, most older people. I don't mean to put you in the most older category, but you had to have been around for a while to have realized he was, you know, to have been around when he was. But he introduced a lot of people to jazz, probably more so than anybody. I have to go because I got commercials coming up.
There's nothing left to talk about anyway.
You don't need skill. You don't have to be a brain. You just call Norm to play the dumb birthday game. Play the dumb, dumb birthday game.
And that's what we're going to play. The temperature in Boston, by the way, 68 degrees. I'm checking the weather. The rain seemed to have eased up a bit. It has been rain. Birthday game, in which I give you a bunch of people who are born on today, on this date anyway, Saturday, August 10th. And we guess their ages, and we just fool around, and we punch each other in the ribs with our elbows and giggle a lot. And we throw pillows at each other. It's that kind of fun. That's the kind of fun we have here during the night. And let's see, we have... Jack Hart, who's not calling us on the phone today.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's nice. Good to hear you. It's good to hear you that way, Big Jack.
You betcha. I felt like I was dislocated yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday we had a problem with the line coming into this new studio, and Jack had called in, and it seemed kind of weird to hear you in that form. But in any event, you've had some excitement because we had thunder and lightning, and you've been able to talk about the wet roads and not just the work crews. And I'm just so pleased for you.
I've been tickled all night.
Yeah, because as we mentioned the other night, Jack has a whole group of his friends who jam up traffic for him in order to give Jack something to talk about.
Yes.
So they all pile up on the highways.
And then,
even then, there's only about 10 cars on the road. You know, how many friends do you have?
I don't have that many friends.
No, not that many friends at all. But it's a good device for using that, you know, whatever I'm saying. I don't know what I'm saying.
Well, one of these days I'll have enough money to create my own empire of people on roadways to cause traffic problems.
I know that you're working on a company that has these big trailer trucks.
Yes.
And stuff that will slide across the highway, not injuring anybody, but just blocking traffic. And that'll give you something.
And filled with like soup and things like this.
Oh, that'll be some trucks too. Yeah, I always love that when a truck spills over and has like chickens that end up on the road. They're clucking away all across the highway.
Usually we'll get a beer truck to tip over and it'll create a bottleneck.
Yeah. You know what? A beer truck and a bottleneck. Was that a kind of clever play on words?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't want to miss that. You know what? You and I get a kick out of, because I worked for an all-news station, WBI, at one time for about 4 or 5 years.
Sure.
I did news, which was kind of fun for a while, but also kind of boring doing the same news over and over again. But we would look for funny items in the news because everything else was so serious. So if you listen to news stations like ours or you watch television, whenever they get to a story that's even slightly almost humorous, but not really, they really milk it for all it's worth because it's the only thing they got that isn't the usual kind of dreary stuff they've been reporting.
Yes.
A truck turned, I tell you, there's it's a honey of a highway. Between Andover and Haverhill this morning, a truck tipped over with two cases of honey that's now dripping on the road, something. And they nurture that.
You
like,
won't believe it, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, and you say, okay, don't overdo it. It's not that funny a story. But it's all they got. Then they have to go back to a story like, well, Jack Kemp has agreed to become the vice presidential nominee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of, or the usual kind of stuff, or I don't know.
Just maybe. Boring and mundane.
Mundane kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
That kind of stuff.
I sit around aching for, you know, something fun to tip over.
I know. Listen, what kind of a truck would you like to tip over? We might be able to work something out here.
Oh, let's see. A banana truck is always good to spread banana peels across the roadway.
Banana peels, you make people, yeah, that's right. People going after the correction of the system, uprighting the truck or something. They could slip on the banana peels, causing more funny stuff, like a Laurel and Hardy movie.
Absolutely.
Especially
if it was right down by the split, do you see? It was, you know.
Banana split. I catch on. No, yeah. your humor's not all that subtle, you know.
This is the point that you're trying to make. You see, you get anything. You can anything that you can grab a hold of that is not the same mundane, newsy little stuff or traffic little things, and you'll do anything with it. You just ache for a couch to fall on the road so that, you know, so far, no traffic problems.
So far, no traffic problems. I think we get that one, too. In the news, there were always things called the kickers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they still use them. Usually after the end of the news, in order for people to go to bed, those who did go to bed at that time, and without being too unhappy, they'd have a funny story in, you know.
Oh, sure.
Down on the lighter side of the news, you know, they'd talk about Mrs. Marie Kravitz, who's been a teller at the West Something Bank for the past 43 years, ran into a funny situation this night. A man came in, shoved a bag under her teller's cage and said, "Fill it up with money," and pointed a gun at her. Well, Mrs. Kravitz, kindly Mrs. Kravitz, not to be whatever by the young bandit, said, "You know what you're doing. What would your mother say if she could see what you're doing now? You take that bag, you take your gun, and you go home, and we'll forget about this whole thing. But you be a good boy in the future." Well, the bandit looked at her startled, stared her in the face for a moment, and then shot her in the head. "So long, and make it a good night." That'd be that kind of a story that would end up, you know.
Well, I know that would send me to sleep feeling much better about myself.
Yeah, I know. That's right. It's a little humorous story that makes you feel kind of good about life.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Are you not going to play the game with us, Tom?
No, I am. I'm just waiting.
Oh, I see. Okay,
Shy and doesn't want to show his face.
He's going to set levels and all. He's going to do technical stuff, and then he'll come in and play the game, Tom Howie. But let's see who else is playing the game, okay? Eleanor in New Jersey. Hello, Eleanor.
Hi.
Where in New Jersey are you?
Tom's River.
Okay. Is that anywhere near Upper Montclair?
No, that Upper Montclair is in the northern part of the state, and I'm more above Atlantic City, below Asbury Park.
Oh, I see. Okay. So I have a friend who, I've got a couple of friends, a husband and wife, who live in Upper Montclair, one of whom called me. I spoke to this very last day. Anytime we get a call from New Jersey, I always ask, "Are you from anywhere near Upper Montclair?" And nobody is. Apparently, nobody lives near Upper Montclair. Well, apparently, it's because of Mike and Melissa, my two friends.
It's a lovely area.
Is it? Yeah, it is. It's a nice town. We went to their wedding in Upper Montclair, New Jersey. So I don't know too much about New Jersey, but I know about where you live. Is that a nice spot near Atlantic City?
North of.
North of Atlantic City.
Yes, sir.
Okay. She called me sir. The other guy called me Mr. Nathan. Boy, time really is beginning to wear into my soul.
Wow, you mind if I call you Sahib?
Sahib would be good.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, Sahib is... That's actually my real name. Sahib Moskowitz.
I see.
Yeah. Let's go to Karen. No, this is Bonnie in Ohio. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Norm.
Hello. We speak again.
Yes, we do.
Our romance.
I was pining away here in Ohio thinking you might have forgotten about us.
No, I haven't forgotten about you at all. Our romance deepens.
Oh, that's good to know.
Okay, we also have Karen, who is in Massachusetts. Karen is in Brockton. Hello, Karen.
Hi, Norm.
How you doing, Karen? Have you played the game with us before?
Of course.
Of course, okay.
A long time ago.
Have you won at all?
No.
Oh, maybe today will be the day. As I point out, winning is not really the major thing. The important thing is having fun.
That's what it's all about.
Win or lose, as long as you have fun. That's
the world a little sillier as a result of this. Hello.
That's right. You know, Jack just mentioned the theme. and the motto of this program, which I have not mentioned too often lately. And say that again, Jack.
To leave the world just a little sillier than you found it.
Exactly, and that's what I have crocheted into my doily. And I hope you'll all take that to heart, and especially you, Bruce, down in Attleboro, because, but then again, Bruce, Attleboro is a fun kind of, is that
it's really hysterical, and you know what, I want to win. I don't care if you take this as a mundane nothing. I want to win.
You don't care whether you're having fun or not. The idea is to win something.
Exactly.
I want to win, and I'm serious about this. That way,
I'm very serious, and I just, you know, let's get on with it.
Okay. Attleboro's a city, actually. It's not a town.
Yes, it is a city.
A city. Well, I salute you, though, as one who lives in a small town. I salute you. You big city guys.
Okay.
I got a ticket there once.
It's just so nice.
Jack, you got a ticket in Attleboro?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like the title of a porno book, you know. A ticket in Attleboro.
There's never been a single famous person come out of Attleboro.
Nobody at all?
No, unfortunately, no.
Oh, that's really... Well, maybe if you... No wonder you want to win, Bruce, because you want to be the first famous person in Attleboro.
I don't even want them to know about it.
Pride for your hometown.
I don't want them to know about it if I win. I just want to win.
You see, this would bring pride to your hometown, and that would bring about municipal projects and federal dollars and so forth and so on.
Am I talking to the president, or I thought I was talking to Norm Nathan?
No, you're talking to Norm Nathan, but Jack Hart is here, and Jack has a tremendous influence on everything.
You bet.
Oh, yeah. They really listen to this
Well,
guy.
If it's pinion on that, I'll tell you, if I win and it's going to, you know, bring bridges and municipal things to this town. I wouldn't even want to do
for
it.
The children?
We're planning on a 19-lane highway right through the middle of Attleboro. I imagine that'll make you feel good.
Well, make sure it doesn't go through Attleboro, because I wouldn't want to be responsible for it.
Okay. Hold on a minute. Don't make it go through Attleboro. It's all set.
I'll see.
Okay. Tom Howie is with us, too. Hi,
yes,
Tom.
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hi, it's good to have you with us. And
thank you. It's good to be here.
We're all excited to play the game, and I guess this would be a good time to begin, isn't it?
Yes.
We're having so much fun, it's a shame to break it up with just playing a silly game. but hey, we'll do it anyway. Okay. A few interesting people have been born on this day, August 10th, and, of course, those of you whose birthday it is today who are listening with us will be kind of pleased to know who shares your birthday, like Eddie Fisher.
Hmm.
Who, as I recall, used to sing on key at least 28% of the time. But he's backing and should poke fun at him now because he's Carrie Fisher's father. And Jamie Lee Curtis's... Is that the same family? They had the same mother? Or
I thought that Jamie Lee Curtis had something to do with...
Tony Curtis.
Tony Curtis.
Well, who was Tony Curtis? Was he married? He wasn't married to...
Michelle Lee? Vivian
Lee? I really don't know, but Carrie Fisher... Anyway, she'd be Eddie Fisher's daughter, and I really like her a lot. I've sent her MASH notes. Do they call them MASH notes anymore? No, I guess
not.
Would
you write her letters about the Alan Alda show?
Yeah. No, but we used to call them, you know, romantic letters. We call them MASH notes. That was in the time when we were necking. They don't use that phrase anymore either. What has this world come to? You kids today,
you're sparking with your honey, huh?
Sparking, yeah, that goes back to my father's generation. But anyway, today is Eddie Fisher's birthday. In all seriousness, never mind the seriousness, but he did have some alcohol problems and all that kind of stuff, and I guess he's overcome them, and he's gone back into the entertainment business. He was born Edwin Jack Fisher in Philadelphia's biggest hit, Oh My Papa. He's been married to Elizabeth Taylor, Connie Stevens, and Debbie Reynolds. Debbie and Eddie are parents of Carrie Fisher, who was the princess in Star Wars. I guess this story kind of puts everything all in perspective. So the question is, how old is Eddie Fisher today, his birthday being August 10th? And what would you say, Eleanor?
Well, he's from my era, but he's a little bit older than I am. So I would guess about 68.
68. Mm-hmm. Okay, Eleanor, that was good reasoning, and I hope the rest of the panel is listening to you and has taken a lesson from you, because that's the way to figure.
We'll see how right I am.
I guess that's true. You may be way off, in which case, don't pay any attention to this broad. Okay? I just said that as a joke. That's sexist, and I don't mean that. You know, it's just tongue-in-cheek. Karen, what do you think?
I'll say 62.
62. And Bonnie?
Well, Norm, I'm going to use a whole different way of deduction in terms of figuring out how old this guy is.
Well, we're going to listen to you because maybe, you know, we're open. We're open for new thoughts, new ideas, new ways of approaching things. Sure.
Well, I'm happy to learn a new system.
Yeah.
I'm going to work on maybe a false assumption, but I would say that back then people married maybe, I'm considering that he was married three times, I think you said.
Yes, I believe I did say that.
Right. I do remember that he was married to Debbie Reynolds, I think you said. And
I would
say that people got married later then, you know, they didn't, people especially who were famous. So I don't know whether I'm wrong or right, but
I don't even
anyway.
I don't even know what you're talking about, but
okay.
Anyway.
No, I just think that when you're famous, you know, you tend to go through marriages, and by the time, you know, you're in your third marriage, you're probably getting older, you know?
I think that's probably true, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I will say that he is 76.
Oh, that's the spirit.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad somebody came up with that number so we could put Jack through his paces. What do you, Bruce, what do you think?
Well, I don't think he's in his 70s. I think he's about 66.
About 66. And if when he gets to Attleboro, he's actually 65 central.
If he gets to Attleboro, he'd probably be about 90.
Something about Attleboro that ages you, I guess. Yeah, I've noticed that. Jack, what do you say?
I'm going to go for 67.
And what do you think, Tom?
I'll say 71.
Okay, he's actually exactly the age that Eleanor, there ensconced in New Jersey, said. He's 68. However, you know, Jack, you were only a year off, and Bruce was not far off either. You're all very, very close.
Mm-hmm.
Except Bonnie, who's gone through the showbiz, this whole showbiz thing.
There's folks count in this like a grenade or what?
I beg your pardon?
Does it count like in grenades? No. Or horseshoes? No, it doesn't count, does it?
If you get close and nobody else is any closer.
I can't hear you.
Oh, I see. Oh, who said they can't hear us?
Karen.
I can hardly hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. We've been having this kind of problem.
You know what? I can hardly hear anything except when you click to me.
Really?
Yeah.
When we click to you?
That's all I can hear. Otherwise, it's very faint.
Yeah. We're not
we
even...
hear you all...
But that's okay.
Well,
I'm enjoying it. I'm listening.
Okay.
You know, an old guy, Mike, I'm 47 years old. It's really hard to hear this.
Yeah, it's probably, you know, we're coming at full blast. Obviously, everybody's hearing is going.
Okay.
That's what we've told the chief engineer. We said, the people can't seem to hear us on the line. And he said, well, why do you have all these semi-deaf people calling you? I said, they're not semi-deaf. There's something wrong with our system. He said, well, no, there's nothing wrong. They cannot hear well.
Well, maybe if you're an egomaniac like me, I don't care if I can hear as long as you can hear me.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
Maybe instead of junky prizes, you should send out to ear trumpets.
Maybe. Oh, yeah, some kind of hearing aid of some sort. I think that's an excellent, excellent idea. Okay. Or at least a pamphlet from some hearing aid company. Rosanna Arquette, actress. She was in the TV movie The Executioner's Song about convicted killer Gary Gilmore. She starred in After Hours with Madonna in Desperately Seeking Susan. I've seen her in a couple of movies.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, she comes from a theatrical family. Her grandfather was Cliff Arquette, who played... Mr. Weaver.
Charlie Weaver,
that's right, on the Jack... Was it Jack Parr? On the Jack Parr show, yeah. He used to sit on the panel. And her father was an actor also.
Hmm.
And I think she has a sister. Isn't there another
Yeah, I can't think of her name offhand, but she does have a younger sister.
And who's also an actress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's ask you, Tom. How old do you think Rosanna Arquette is?
I'll say 35.
35 is what the guy says. Okay. How about you, Jack?
Now, she's either just a little younger than me or just a little older than me.
That's a good title for a song, isn't it? She's just a little younger than I am. Or perhaps she's a little bit older. I don't know what her age may be, but she's so beautiful I'm getting bolder. Hey, man, that's Hep. That's the new 90s sound. I don't know whether you've slept through it and don't know what's going on, but that's what it is, fella.
Well, cool.
Yeah, man, Eddie Fisher is going to be the key figure this coming in 97. Look for him. Hey, listen, if Pat Boone can do a heavy metal album, which he's coming out with this fall, anything can happen.
Oh, big band version of the heavy metal tunes?
No, he's going to actually do it with heavy metal artists.
Oh, but I thought it was doing I thought he was doing with big band arrangements, though, wasn't he?
I don't know. He says he got the idea, was on the golf course with one of his friends who was, I forgot who that was. That was one of the heavy metal guys.
Hmm.
And I thought he was going to do like a Tony Bennett or the Frank Sinatra thing, doing it with other artists too. I don't know. I mean, it should be interesting to hear it.
Hmm, yeah, that would be kind of...
Yeah, either interesting or terribly boring and everything, you know. We'll have to wait till it comes out. But I want to be the first, man. If I can't play it exclusively, the heck with it. You know, that used to go on during the times when people would compete to see who could make a hit record out of something.
Is that right?
If one disc jockey didn't get the record before another one, he wouldn't play it unless, if it became very popular, he'd have to. But he wanted to get it first and break it.
So wouldn't a lot of people only be playing one song?
That may be the case, but we have our pride. We may put the broadcasting excitement in the background to satisfy our pride, but we have our pride. No, that was true. Bob Clayton was the guy, big disc jockey in WHDH. Norm Prescott was another one. And if one got the record before the other wouldn't play it. They'd fight the record distributors. But anyway, that's a whole other thing. Anyway, how old is Rosanna Arquette?
Rosanna Arquette.
I'm happy we met. You bet. Rosanna Arquette. Ooh, yeah. Yeah. I was born with the composing blood.
Wow.
Streaming through my system.
You should tote a little piano around with you and just jot down little black dots.
Piano. Rosanna, I'm sitting at the piano, eating my banana. I want you so much.
Rosanna. Let me feel your touch. Oh, Rosanna.
Anyway, are you ready to guess, or do you want to maybe continue making a fool of myself?
Oh, no, you're having fun.
38 states knows me as a total idiot as a result of this.
Yeah, but they're up listening. They're so enjoying. They're having fun. They're people all over the country are just relaxing and staying up late and setting their alarm clocks just to listen to you.
Hey, let's tune in, Ma. I think the guy's going to make a jackass of himself again tonight. It's a little embarrassing, but what the heck? We don't have to look him straight in the eye when he's doing it.
Let's see how way out this guy goes tonight.
Yeah. What kind of silly-ass thing is this guy going to be doing today? Jeez.
I bet he's wearing funny shirt.
Yeah. I bet the boss comes in right in the middle of the program. Probably get himself up around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and he'll be on the air ripping him off the air and making an apology.
Oh, mercy.
Oh, my goodness sake. Okay, you want to guess Rosanna Arquette thing, or are we having too much fun to go back to that again?
Yeah, Rosanna Arquette. I forgot about Rosanna Arquette, and how could anyone forget about Rosanna? Yeah. I would say she is 37.
37, okay. And Bruce, what do you think? And if you want to take
just
a survey
to,
in,
just,
in Attleboro
just
first.
To be a... You know, an ass from Outer World, I'll say 35.
35.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Okay. Hmm. Okay. That's okay. Don't make a problem.
But I think that she's about that age.
No, apparently you do. Otherwise, you wouldn't have guessed that age.
No, I did. No, I have no idea.
No.
No, I was going with...
Okay. Bruce, shut up. You've dragged this out long enough. That's crazy for me to say. I drag out this whole career, my whole career long and too long. Bonnie, how old do you think Rosanna Arquette is?
I'm going to prove I can give short answers, Norm. 39.
Do you want me to do that when you know...
You have the greatest Jack right there. We don't need you to do the other Jack.
You know something, you're absolutely right.
Right. I mean, with that wonderful voice and everything,
yeah,
I mean,
nice
gee.
You to say.
That's right. You shamed me out of it, yes.
Just no need, Norm.
Thank you very much. I love you, Bonnie. I want you so bad.
Thank you, Norm.
Karen, how old do you think Rosanna Arquette is?
40.
Ooh, that was really short. I got so short I couldn't understand. 40, you did say 40.
Yes.
Okay. Eleanor.
Oh, goodness. I'm wavering between 36 and 37, but 36 was my first thought, so I'll go with that.
Okay, I'm sorry you didn't go with your second thought, because he is 37. And that's what Jack Hart said. He said 37. Do you remember Rhonda Fleming, the actress, Rhonda Fleming?
Yeah, she used to do commercials, kind of a big woman.
Rhonda Fleming.
She's made a lot of movies. Let's see, she was born Marilyn Louise. I don't know why I tell you this in Los Angeles, except it's kind of interesting. Redheaded beauty of the 1940s. Made a lot of films in the 40s, including Little Egypt and Inferno. Don't they both sound rotten?
Yeah.
She runs a women's cancer clinic in memory of her sister, which is really nice. I didn't realize she was doing that. Rhonda Fleming. Now, she was quite a glamorous lady back in the 40s. Did do a lot of movies, and I should... They're probably not terribly memorable, or we'd all remember them.
Well, those two sounded steamy. Little Egypt and the Inferno.
See, Rhonda Fleming... taking you to places you've never been before. In the exciting, steamy movie, Little Egypt. Wonderful, steamy movie. I was terribly excited. Jack Hart, WBC Radio Traffic. Sometimes when you see reviews like that, you wonder how good the movie is when they start quoting, you know, Sam Sam Zalzenheimer. From the Dayton, Ohio...
Bugler.
Not even that, maybe the Shopper's Guide. Something like that. Three thumbs up. The Samson Midgets of Walla Walla, Washington. Anyway, Bonnie, how old do you think Rhonda Fleming is?
Oh, Norm, how can you do this to me?
Because
I've never even heard of
that. That's because I want you so bad. I want you so... No. Anyway, I think I said that already, didn't I?
Yes, yeah, it doesn't help me with this woman. I've never even heard of her.
Rhonda,
I watch AMC a lot, too.
Yeah, I don't think she's made the kind of movies they would show on AMC.
Oh,
I mean, they're not bad. I mean, they're not obscene movies or porn or anything. It's just that they're kind of nondescript. Although she was considered, you know, quite a glamorous lady back then.
Yeah, I mean, Norm, about a year ago, I just discovered that there was a guy named Robert Preston.
Oh, Robert Preston was superb.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're running his Music Man a lot now. He was excellent in that.
And his The Dark at the Top of the Stairs, wonderful movie.
Oh, The Dark at the Top of the Stairs. That was Rosalind Russell, was it not?
I don't know who the woman
was.
I think he's terrific. So much energy and enthusiasm.
No, Robert, was he in Dark at the Top of the Stairs?
Oh, yes.
I didn't realize that.
I've watched it about four times. I really love it.
That's
a beautiful movie.
That was from a William Inge
play, I believe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, tell me about Rhonda Fleming. Well, how old do you think she is?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I thought maybe I could reroute your mind there, Norm. I tried.
You did reroute it for about a minute and a half.
Okay. I'll say I have no idea, so I will just guess and say 72.
Okay. Eleanor, what do you think?
I didn't hear the previous caller's answer. Could you tell
72. She said Rhonda Fleming was 72 was her guess.
72.
Yes.
I know she played in a few movies with Ronald Reagan.
Was she in real movies with Ronald Reagan?
We all know how memorable those were.
Oh, God.
Nicole, I guess she's younger than him. 73.
Yeah. Okay. And Jack, what do you say?
Isn't she about like 11 feet tall, sort of a big-shouldered woman?
No, you must be thinking of somebody else. Sybil Jason. You're thinking of Sybil Jason.
Oh, I see.
You know who Sybil Jason was? There actually was an actress named Sybil Jason. It's when Shirley Temple was doing so well, and, you know, in about eight, turning up 12 movies a day, one of the other studios tried to compete. They wanted to get a child star, too, because they realized the value of somebody like that. So they got Sybil Jason. And obviously, since there's a total blank and a silence on the line here, none of you have ever heard of Sybil Jason.
Sybil Jason? That sounds like a character in a horror movie, doesn't it?
I know it.
See, Sybil Jason sliced them to ribbons.
So anyway, Sybil Jason, I don't know how many movies she made, but she never, I mean, nobody ever came close to the, as a child actress or actor, came as close to, as Shirley Temple did. But I do remember Sybil Jason, and our street actually divided itself between Sybil Jason and Shirley Temple fans. We were Sybil Jason fans because we were for the underdog. It was like the people, the kids who divided themselves between Red Sox fans and Boston Braves fans. If you were for the underdog, you were for the Braves. You could tell a person's character by whom they were for. Boy, that was such an interesting story. I'm so glad I told that.
Now, did Sybil Jason, did she have a particular hair thing or something going on like Shirley Temple?
No, she didn't. Her hair, as I recall, was fairly straight, but it was black. She had black hair. I guess they were going to go, you know, if we can't get a blonde with lots of curls like Shirley Temple, let's get one with black hair and straight.
I see.
You know, we'll counter with people who don't like blonde hair and curly curls and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And so what was the next movie studio would have a bald child, maybe?
I believe that's exactly right. And her name was Epson Pupa. And she, however, she never made any movies. They decided at the last minute it was a stupid idea. They probably, a guy named Jack Hart, some traffic reporter, was kind of bring it up in about 50 years from now.
And the son of the bald child.
That's right, and so it happened. Anyway, who did I ask about this? That was you, Jack, wasn't it? Rhonda Fleming?
Oh, yeah. That was Erskine Pooper. Rhonda Fleming, 78.
78. Tom, what do you say, Tom?
I'll say 74.
74, says Tom. And what do you think, Karen?
I'll say 75.
75. And Bruce?
I think she's 74.
I think that was an imitation of Jack Kennedy or Ted Kennedy. I think that was. By God, that was okay. No. We all knew it right off, so
Thank
it must
you.
Have been good. Yeah, very good.
Thank you.
Okay, Rhonda Fleming is 73 today.
Oh.
That means Eleanor now has two correct answers.
Thank God.
And Jack has one. You're on your way to winning a whole, you know, if you keep up the pace, Eleanor. You could win a whole bunch of junk. Yeah. Jimmy Dean, the sausage guy, an entertainer and country and western person and all that, he was born, you know, he was born Seth Ward. That's a nice name, Seth Ward.
But he liked an actor that had the same name, Jimmy Dean?
That may be.
Yeah.
He was born in Plainview, Texas. His biggest hit, Big Bad John. Remember Big Bad John?
Big Bad John.
That's the one. That's exactly the one. He wrote in an hour and a half on an airplane flight heading to Nashville, according to this.
It was on the charts 4 months and made it to number one in late 1961. Think of that now. That's, what's that, 35 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He was also responsible for the Muppets' early success. I didn't know that. I don't know.
Whose early success?
Muppets. That's the channel. No, that's not Channel 2. That isn't? No,
yeah,
that's...
Yeah, the Sesame Street. The...
Yeah, because that's a funny show. Is that what the two old guys in the balcony of the theater?
Oh, no, that's the Muppet Show. The Muppets are also on the Children Television Network Sesame Street.
Right. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. I don't... It doesn't explain why he... How he happened to be responsible for that. But
maybe they thought he was funny looking and made a big giant one of them.
Yeah, maybe they all, yeah, they all look like Seth Ward or Jimmy Dean. That could be. Anyway, he was also born on August 10th, and it'd be exciting, wouldn't it, to know how old he is?
Yeah.
My God, let's do that. Bruce.
He couldn't possibly be as old as you are, Norm, so he's 62.
You keep bringing that up, Bruce.
No, I didn't bring that up.
No, but I mean comparing everybody's age with me and saying everybody in the world is younger than I.
I think you're at the exact... My mother was turned 71 August 9th.
I want her, too. And I want her badly.
Well, if you can get by my stepfather, fine.
I'll kill the man.
It's all right with me.
I'll kill the man for your mother. I want her that badly.
I think he's about 62, 63.
Okay. Well, okay. 62. Okay. So you know, that's the way he's just getting on with it seriously when I'm talking death and destruction and killing and wanting his mother. He doesn't want to have any more of that.
No, I don't mind. Hey, yeah, well, I mean, you're much more famous than he is.
Oh, I see.
You're not much more famous than he is,
okay,
to be honest with you. But
oh,
you're
shut
little,
up. Will you
you're
shut
about
up.
9/10 more famous than he is.
Okay. Hey, Karen, what do you think? How old is Jimmy Dean today, do you suppose?
The toughie. I'm going to say 64.
64. All right. And Bonnie?
Norm, I just wanted to say he also did a very funny song called Please Don't Eat the Biscuits, about a family that had relatives coming over.
Oh, really?
And it was all about this one person waiting to see if there would be any biscuits left by the time they made the rounds of the table.
Oh,
and all these people were taking, you know, humongous amounts. And he's saying, please don't eat the biscuits.
That does sound funny.
It is funny.
I hadn't heard that. That's
it
good.
Is really cute. Anyway, I would say that he is 59.
59. Okay. And Eleanor?
Did the other caller say 59?
Yeah, 59, 64, and 62 are the three guesses we've had.
Oh, he's older than 59. From my era, I'm sure of it. I'm older than me. 68?
Okay. And Jack?
Jimmy Dean, the Sausage King. Sage fella.
Yeah, Jimmy Dean, the Sausage King. Where are you today? I've just had a couple of your sausages, and that is why I must say they're mighty, mighty delicious. And you know what else? By hickin',
I wishes.
They all taste so much, you know, just like chicken. There's no such word as hickin', as I understand, but that's pushing it a little bit. Anyway, we're...
Let's see.
What do you think about Jimmy Dean?
Jimmy and Sausage King, he's out on the links. he's going to be 65.
65.
No, he's older than that.
Well, you already made your guess. You just sit there quietly with your hands folded and stop that.
Yeah.
Tom, what do you think?
I'll say 67.
67 is closer to his age.
Hmm.
But hitting it again was Eleanor's walking away with this. 68 is correct. Did you know that, Eleanor, or was that a guess?
No, it was a pure guess, but I remember he had a television show back in either the 50s or the 60s, and I know he's a little bit older than me.
Well, that must be how he involved how he hooked up with the Muppets. That would have been in the early days of the Muppets.
I guess
Muppets have been around 30 years.
Well, yeah, I guess that's so. Mm. Okay. Here's I guess the last one we can do is Patty Austin. Patty Austin, singer from New York City, made her debut when she was 3 years old at Harlem's Apollo Theater singing Teach Me Tonight. Her first number one hit did not come until 1982, sung with James Ingram, Baby, Come to Me. She had another big hit with Ingram, How Do You Keep the Music Playing, in 1983 from the movie Best Friends, and she was also in the film Tucker. Tucker, was that the one about the automobile manufacturer?
Yeah.
Which played by Bridges, not Bo or Lloyd, but the other...
Jeff
Bridges, yeah, played the part of the guy who was trying to market the Tucker car.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Patty Austin. Mm-hmm. Patty Austin. Let's see. We'll start with Eleanor. What do you think?
I'm more likely to remember the car, the Tucker, than I am. I don't. You're out of my era now.
Patty Austin. No.
Patty Austin.
Patty Austin.
When did she have her first hit?
Her first hit was not till 1982, but she'd been performing for a while before that. I'm not suggesting she's very old or anything, but her first hit was 1982. And then her second hit was 1961. Wait a minute. What am I looking at? 1982. That's the only. And 1983, she was their second hit.
I have no idea. 38.
Okay, Karen, what do you think?
I'll have to say 43.
43. And what do you think, Bonnie?
Oh, my gosh. This is tough, Norm. I know the name, and that's about it. I'd say... 34.
And Bruce? What do you think, Bruce?
I couldn't hear the others. But
38, 43, and 34.
28.
28. I sound like I'm giving somebody's measurements. The Rhonda Fleming's measurements.
No, I'm not.
No, what? Did you say 28?
No, that was your measurements. No, 28.
How much?
28.
28, yes. Okay, Jack, what do you think?
40.
He makes such funny sounds. I see 40. 40.
Something of that. I have to
shake my whole body to get my brain to move the information.
If we don't keep going, we're going to have to call ABC and tell them to postpone the start of the 4 o'clock news.
Tell them to have a sandwich.
I appreciate if you'd just come home and answer quickly.
See, I will say 44.
Okay, what do you say, Tom?
And I will say 47.
47. The actual age is 48.
Mm.
She's 48. So Tom actually gets that. But the winner is Eleanor. So I'm going to have to, we have to run along, as we say now. And so I'm going to thank you all for taking part in this. And Eleanor, hold on. Tom will take your name and address, and we're going to send a bunch of garbage out to your house you wouldn't believe. And we call it a prize, but actually, I don't know. You may think of it as a little less than that. But hold on. Don't hang up. Bonnie?
Yeah?
Thank you very much.
I don't get a peeper's ring. Gosh.
I'm sorry. That's right, too. Part of the prize is a spring peeper's key ring. Karen and Bruce, thanks very much.
It was horrible.
Yep. Love playing with both of you. And, of course, it's always fun to play with you, Jack.
Oh, it's always a delight, and it's been a fun week.
I've enjoyed having you on each night. That's really nice. Do you think maybe we can call Bob and tell him to extend his vacation another week?
Sure, tell him to take a ride.
Yeah, because, and you'll report, you'll even give him a traffic report every 3 or 4 days.
He can call in personally.
Okay, because it has been a great deal of fun.
62.
Oh, my.
But I'm a professional cook, and it's called the Vintage Food Sampler.
Uh-huh.
And I have gotten so much quality information from this. So I wanted to pass this along.
Well, that's very nice of you to say that, Suzanne.
Now, that's just part one.
Okay, no, but I appreciate that.
the book, since it was a cookbook, I thought, I knew it was an old one.
Oh,
and
I
normally
have.
I don't
I
send,
love it.
I, yeah, I don't send old books unless they're mysteries or something that holds up through the years. And I know cookbooks are kind of fun, but it's kind of interesting because I had no idea that you were a cook.
I know. I must have over 200 cookbooks.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I love cooking. I love cooking. I was trained as an academic, but this is something I just seem to need to do a little bit. Part two of my call, you said that nothing rhymes with chicken. All right. Let's...
Oh, no, no. I didn't say that. I happened to pick a word. Because I had to think kind of quickly. I hadn't written, I don't write any of this stuff in advance. And I said hicken or something. And I said, I don't know what that word means. I'm sure there are words that rhyme with chicken. And I suspect you're going to tell me if you write this very moment.
Do you mind if I go through them?
Go ahead. No,
okay.
Please.
Sticking, stricken, kicking, ticking, licking, picking. And how about Marty frickin'?
Okay. Did you just think of those, or do you have a rhyming dictionary?
No, I did, honest to God.
Okay.
Honest to God, but I love to write poetry myself.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Okay, night now.
Oh, that's it, eh? Okay.
Oh, no, would you like to tell me something?
Just that I appreciate the call, and I'm glad that you like the cookbook and all that. Thanks a million,
Susan.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Susan.
Worth it. Yeah. I believe the lottery number in Box Farm was 8462, if I'm not mistaken.
In Box Farm, it was, actually it was 7486.
Well, I was close.
Well, how did you happen to give the number that you said?
Because I've been playing that number.
Oh, I see. No, 7486 was the daily lottery, and the Mass Millions was 3, 15, 17, 43, 44, 45, bonus number 13, and nobody won.
Yeah, I know, because I got a dollar invested in that today. Just for the last couple of weeks, with my luck there, I've been playing 125, 1250, boxed and straight, and it came out 251, and I didn't have it boxed that day.
Oh.
I wanted to be cheap.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Could I buy the movie rights to that story?
Yes. Actually, the movie rights were made somewhere in 1939, a movie called The Evils of Numbers, which was two brothers. One was a lawyer for the big-time bookmaking mafia, and the other one was a banker who ran his own little penny anti-bookmaking number operation.
I'm sorry. I drifted off to sleep during that talk. Excuse me. Don't repeat it, though, anyway, because it's okay. Somebody will call and tell me about it.
Yeah. Do you realize that Cigar is going today to try and probably break Citation's record of 17 straight wins.
No, I didn't know that. That's interesting to know. Where is Cigar racing?
California.
I see. Well, do you hope he wins? Is it a he? Is that a mare or a stallion?
What?
Cigar. No, is that male or female?
Cigar better be a male.
Why?
Why? Because he better be a male.
Now, why should Cigar be a male? Why can't it be a mare, a female horse?
Well, let me put it this way here. All right. Cigar. All right. Is a brown horse, 6 years old. Can you tell me when a horse goes from either being a colt to a horse? What age?
What has that got to do with whether this is a female or a male horse? That's all I asked you, Wolf.
It's a male horse. He's a six-year-old.
Okay. So it's a male horse then.
Yeah.
Okay. And
actually, I'll tell you a joke about
three years. I think is kind of the official
five years.
Thing.
5 year old.
Well, I think that's kind of late. I think a horse begins at a little younger than that, but I know the official, somebody decided 5 years was the time.
Right.
But then again, you know less than I do. I at least own a horse, Wolfie.
You only own one.
That's right.
In my 45 years, I work on farms. I think that I carried out maybe 12,000, if not more, different horses.
I don't know why it's hard to believe that you ever carried even one horse, but I'll believe what you say, Wolfie. Anyway, what's the other part to this?
I believe he's going to be beat by, it's a very short field. It's only five horses going against him. And I think he's going to be beat by a horse called Siphon. Siphon, S-I-P-H-O-N, who was bred in Brazil and is only a five-year-old horse. Yeah.
Well, you're saying only a five-year, I guess it just turned into, according to your terms, it just became a horse.
January 1st, he became a horse.
I see.
Yeah, just for the fun of it.
Yes.
The beaten length distance for a horse, when it says in the charts that the horse was, let me give you one, horse called Tinner's Way. Horse was beaten his last race by 13 and a half lengths. What is the actual distance between, he was... sixth by 13 and a half lengths in an eight-horse field. What was the actual distance between him and horse number seven?
I don't know. I'd have to figure that, but I don't really feel like it. So why don't you give me the answer?
Well, the answer is there's 9 feet. That's a definite in the beaten length per every beaten length that he has, so that's 9 times 13 and then
117 something, right, feet.
And 4.5 feet for the half a length. So, yeah.
And if pain persists or is unusually severe, please get to the back of the bus and do not interrupt the driver. Thank you, and close cover before striking.
Let me give you the little joke. I don't know if this one can be, have your finger on the button.
I can't. In fact, I'm going to put it on the button right now. Son of gun, I cut him off. What a mistake.
He was, pretty young. He had a show in Washington, D.C., which isn't too far from here. It came on like 7:30 in the evening. It might have been one of those 15-minute shows, Definitely wasn't longer than half an hour. And it was a local show. Jimmy Dean started in Washington. It was WMAL, Channel 7. Well, I can remember it very well. And so did Henson and the Muppets. They were with him.
Oh, I see. So that's the connection he had.
Right. They were on his show.
I see.
They didn't have nearly as many Muppets then.
Yeah.
There was maybe half a dozen Muppets.
Yeah.
Later on, it got to be, tremendous. But they would do commercials. The Muppets would sell hot dogs and stuff. They would actually do the commercials,
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. I was thinking, you mentioned it could have been a 15-minute, or she had said not no more than a 30-minute show, but... Because there were a lot of 15-minute shows. Sure. Then one was a lady. See if you remember this one, because you're talking the 50s.
Right.
And this was maybe the late 40s, early 50s. Television, in fact, WBZ-TV, our TV station here, was the first on in Boston with television, which was 1948. I think that's pretty much the starting point for most television stations across the country. And there was a Roberta something sponsored by Mohawk Rugs who sang. And that was only a 15-minute show, and I was desperately in love with her. It was kind of funny because at the beginning, you could really get emotionally attached to people on television because you'd never seen people before television came along. I heard them on radio, and I thought she was quite attractive. I had fantasies about her. In fact, sometimes I still do. And you often wonder, whatever happened to these people? There was one, do you remember a show called Lucky Pup?
No, we didn't have that.
No, that was a network show. You may have and may not remember it. It was, because that was a puppet thing, too. There was a live woman, I've forgotten her name, and Lucky Pup, there were two puppets. I'm sorry I brought them up, because the names somehow have just flown out of
that's
my head.
That's kind of vaguely familiar to me. Yeah, we have Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, yeah. That's right. Of course, Fran was the live person, and Kukla and Ollie were the puppets. So that kind of thing, like the puppets, was pretty common then.
Yeah.
They're still on public television. They still use puppets and that kind of stuff, but they don't use them so much anymore, as they used to be quite popular back then.
It seems hard to believe you could do a 15-minute television show, but another person you had on your dumb birthday, Eddie Fisher had a 15-minute show for Coke. He used to come on here for Coca-Cola.
Yeah, that's right. The 15-minute shows were not unheard of.
Dinah Shore had one for Chevy. This is in the beginning now, like in the early 50s around here.
Yes.
You know, 52 or 50, you know, back in that era. And I can remember when Arthur Godfrey was on the radio much longer than he was on television. In other words, his radio show in the mornings was like 2 hours long.
And he did a morning drive time show, didn't he, out of Washington?
Well, that was before me. The era I'm talking about was when he had the McGuire sisters and the Cordettes and Joyce LaRosa and everybody. He used to have a morning show. It came on every morning.
But he must have, because you're talking the 50s.
Right.
Was he on television by that point?
In the early 50s. He was big.
He was big on radio. Not big on radio, but he was on Washington, D.C. morning radio. Maybe that was in the 40s.
Yeah, that was before TV.
Yeah.
Because he was coming out of New York, the period I'm talking about.
Okay.
Because Archie Blyer was the band leader, and Tony Marvin was his announcer.
That's right. That's right, Arthur.
Yeah, remember?
Arthur. What do you think of this, Tony? What do you think? Well, that's right, Arthur.
Yeah,
that was his main job, was to say, that's right, Arthur.
He was the first Ed McMahon.
That's right, exactly. He played that role.
He had that basso profundo voice. You know?
Yeah, he had a great voice.
Oh, he had a real radio voice.
Yeah, but he'd agree with everything Arthur said and kind of suck up to him, the same as Ed McMahon did with Johnny Carson.
But that really struck a nostalgic nerve there, because Jimmy Dean was kind of, he had a show where he was sort of like an Andy Griffith type guy.
Yeah.
He'd just amble around the stage, he'd sing, and he had country humor, and nobody knew who he was then.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Now, I'm glad you kind of pieced that together, because I couldn't understand what connection he had with the Muppets. I understand now as a result of what you're saying. But he was always a kind of a folksy guy.
Yeah.
With a Southern accent.
Right.
I guess when you have a Southern accent, certainly back those days, you had to be folksy. That sort of came along with it.
That's just the way he was.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Norm.
Thank you, Leo.
Riding around and going for ice cream.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and you mentioned that place in Middleton. Were you talking about Sandy's?
No, that's right. I was talking about Sandy's.
Yeah, you know what?
Yeah.
When I went to SXA, I used to work there, right? And when we were done hanging, we'd always go there for ice cream afterwards. It was really great.
Oh, that's good.
That place. I loved it.
Yeah, the Macy family owned that. Sandy Macy is the daughter in the family, and she used to be the one maybe that you dealt with when you bought ice cream there.
I don't know. I was only a kid.
I know that you just knew that the stand was there.
Yeah,
and that they took that down. They put up a restaurant and stuff. It's now a Chinese restaurant.
I know. I saw that.
Yeah, and I kind of miss. I miss the ice cream place, the ice cream, little typical old-fashioned ice cream stand that used to be there.
And especially, right, after we were done hanging,
yeah,
it was great to go there, and I used to always get a root beer float and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
It was beautiful.
Now,
I missed that a lot.
You said you were in the barn. Now, do you live on a farm?
No,
now?
No. Well, it's more like a garage. We used to have ponies here, but I grew up on a farm, but we moved to here. But now, when we first moved here a long time ago, we still had ponies that we brought from the farm. But now it's like, I used to live in the middle of a swamp. Now I live in the middle of like a housing development.
Oh, okay. So there isn't that much room anymore, mean?
No, but we still call it the barn.
Now, the stuff that you learned at Essex Aggie, are you in that business now? You're not working in on a farm or anything or florist shop or nothing like that.
Actually, I was working at a gas station because none of that's around here anymore.
I know it.
It's like it's.
You know what was sad about Essex Aggie?
What
was when they were selling the cows. Because they don't have there. I don't believe there are any of those Holsteins there anymore.
Really?
I don't think so. They had
blows my mind because I worked there for 3 years, and I actually bought a calf when we lived in our old house on the farm. I bought a calf from them but it died from leptospirosis.
Just the fact that it died from a disease bothers me. I'm sorry to hear that. The thing was that they realized that at Essex, which is called Essex Agriculture and Technical College, it's actually a college now. What they realized was that there wasn't that much work on farms and that kind of thing, so they re-geared it. They figure there's no point in having kids learn how to deal with cows because they probably wouldn't ever deal with cows anymore. Not that there aren't any. There are still some dairy farms, but not very many. So they sold the cows and the kids who had really grown to love them like you would love a puppy or any kind of an animal you got attached to that you dealt with day after day really felt so badly. But they felt that that era was gone, and so that was the end of the end of the Holsteins.
Yeah, because you know what? I kind of went in the last era of that where I'm talking on the phone on the radio. This is my brother. He just came in.
Okay.
He wanted to know what I was doing. But, all right, did you get my letter?
Gee, I may have, Charlie. I can't think of it offhand.
I sent you.
I probably have it because otherwise you would have gotten an answer from me.
Sent it off not too long ago.
No, I probably will get to it now, and I will respond.
All right, because no, that doesn't matter. But because I sent you an article about theremin. You know the theremin.
Oh, I remember reading an article.
From the New York Times.
Yeah, because I was talking about the instrument, weird instrument, the theremin, and I hadn't realized that there was actually a guy named theremin who invented that.
So did you see it?
Yes, I did see it.
Because you know what really blew my mind about it, right?
Yeah.
Was the girl and that playing it and theremin himself, right? When they were the pictures of them, and of course nobody in all these 38 states knows what we're talking about, but if you look at the picture, the weird look in their eyes. While they're playing it, it's like they look like they're out in space or something. I don't know. It just blew my mind. And it just the last time I talked to you, it was like the next morning because I said I was going to mail a letter off right away. But then this guy I was working with says, "Oh look," because he gets the New York Times every day, and he says, "Oh look, here's an article about theremin." And I looked at it, and I was going to copy it just because I wanted the picture, but then I never got around to it, so I just threw it in the mailbox.
How long ago did you send this?
Oh, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago or something.
Oh, okay, no, that's not the one. Then I'm a little behind in mail, so I probably haven't gotten to your note yet.
Yeah, my letter has a big black X on the back because it's the. They wouldn't stick, and I taped it with electrical tape.
Okay, I'll find it, and I'll send you a note back when I get it.
Yep.
And I thank you. I'm going to have to move along, Charlie, but because I just want to take a few more calls before we say goodbye.
All right, so
But I thank you for sending that about the article, and I'm sure I've got that. I'm sure I do, and I'll send you a note anyway. And I thank you for the call.
All right, thank you.
Take care, Charlie. All right,
goodbye, Miss Grace.
Yeah, goodbye now. Okay, 254-1030. We'll take some more calls just a little.
It's a broadcast from the Saugus Dump.
I never broadcast from the Saugus Dump, but there was a transmitter there of one of the stations, I believe.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well.
But anyway, we go back together, which is the...
We certainly do, and I don't know of anybody who's contributed more to the jazz scene in Boston than you. And I think you should be highly commended for it, and I thank you for the many joys that you have brought to me.
Oh,
as
boy.
A jazz fan.
Babe, Frank, you're very nice. That makes me feel just so darn good. Thank you.
Well, I miss the jazz, as I'm sure you do. And it was class stuff you did. You fostered a real culture. Like,
well,
a few guys like Nat Hentoff, yourself, who really knew what was going on.
Well, that's nice of you to say that. Actually, I got my interest in jazz from Nat Hentoff. But I was just very lucky. I just sat around all night playing the things I love to play. And you don't get a chance to do that in broadcasting or in anything, in life usually.
Yeah. Well, I'm a retired lawyer, and I play jazz piano, so...
Oh, do you?
Yeah, so I feel like I'm related to you,
Oh, that's great. Do you play now? Do you play with groups and things?
There's not the opportunity so much anymore, but I get down to Florida and play more jazz with groups down there of older guys that do jazz.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sensational.
We're trying to keep it alive like you did all those
years.
Well,
what... Do you play... much for your own pleasure at home and stuff?
Yeah. I've got a Falcone piano down here, and we have a lot of stuff we do with it.
I think that's... I really envy you. I wish I could play. I can't.
Yeah.
I play a little bit, but I mean, not... I shouldn't even say a little bit. I play practically nothing at all. But my great pleasure is just listening to guys like you who do play well. I'm envying you a lot for being able to do that.
Well, if you're ever coming down Hingham Way, I'd like you to stop in and hear this piano. You'd love it.
Yeah, I've heard of it, the Falcone.
There's only about 200 in the world, because he wanted to be sort of like a Stradivarius in the piano industry, and... The thing went under because, he wasn't such a great businessman, but he really produced a great piano.
Oh, that sounds incredible. That's really nice. You're nice to say what you did anyway. I appreciate that.
You had great culture on radio back then. I mean, I go back to Ken Ovenden on WEEI.
Oh, gee, I haven't heard that name in a million years. He had one of the great voices in radio.
Didn't he?
Yeah, beautiful. Very deep, rich voice.
And Arch McDonald and Streeter Stewart and all the class guys like yourself. And the media now has descended to, the nadir, as far as I'm concerned. You were the apex of it all.
Oh, wow. Hey, you're handing it out too strong for me, Frank.
I can't say enough for you.
Thanks a lot. Now, because you're mentioning all these magical names that have been... part of broadcasting history in Boston through the years. They were, all of them, very, very special.
They were, as you were.
Oh, well, thanks a lot. I'm still here. I'm still here, Frank.
I'm going to hang on.
I'm hanging by the tips of my fingers, but I'm still hanging in there, Frank, and I thank you.
Great.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Yeah, what happened to Marilyn Guralnick?
Oh, she's still around. You would love her. She looks as young as she did 40 years ago.
Good.
Okay.
Thanks, Norm.
Take care, Frank. Let's go to, let's try Warren in Gloucester. Hi, Warren.
Good morning, Norm. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you this morning?
Okay. I woke up at 3, and I guess I'm supposed to speak on BZ this morning.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
Well, actually, I was 4. I don't know. I woke up, and I said, what am I going to do? What am I supposed to do? And, I figured, well, I'll call you. I haven't called you in a while.
Well, I'm glad you call it.
And you got my postcard from Montana, I take it?
Yes, thank you very much.
Oh, great. It was nice out there.
It's a beautiful state. I love Montana.
Uh-huh.
Land of the big sky. I think it's beautiful. I forgot. Now, what part of Montana were you in?
I was in the Bitterroot Valley, an hour south of Missoula.
Okay, so you were in the Rocky Mountain era, the western part of the state.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is lovely country. Did you get up to Helena? They got a gallery up there of Remington works and Russell and all the old Western painters and sculptors and stuff. That just thrilling in Helena, which as you well know is the capital of the state. Missoula, there was a big heavyweight fight that was fought there. Not a heavyweight, but a boxing bout.
Yeah. No, we didn't get to Helena, but we did get to my cousin and I went to Glacier National Park, which is nice.
Yeah.
And, the Rockies are great. You know, it's like east or west, but home is best. And after 2 days in the Rockies, I miss Gloucester. I miss the ocean.
Well, no, Gloucester's a very unique community and quite lovely.
We spent one night in Big Fork, and then we went up to Flathead Lake, which 30 miles long, about 15 miles wide, and it was so good to see the water.
Oh, you really missed the water then when you were away from
it. Yeah, well, my sign, my astrological sign is a water sign, and so I'm Sagittarius, rather.
Okay.
And so, I just really missed the water, and even in the western part, which is probably wetter than the eastern part of Montana, they still irrigate a lot, and you realize it's just dry and dusty, and it's very pretty.
No, it's kind of interesting, but a big chunk of this country, about a third of it, is really desert to some extent. And if you go a little further west than the Montana, you know, like for example, the state of California, the Mojave Desert, then over to Nevada and New Mexico. And even further east from that point on, it's desert. And you look at, you know, you come back to New England, it's like driving back in or coming back into a jungle. We forget how much rainfall we have here, and as a result, how much growth we have of plants and things. And there's so little of that in a very, very big part of the country.
That's true, yeah.
So I can understand why you'd miss Gloucester, which has a great deal of character anyway. Kind of a very unusual city.
Yeah. But I'm awfully glad I went to Montana. And I had been to Wyoming, but I'd never been to Montana. Met very nice people. People I didn't even know gave me their phone numbers because we had a common interest, a common disease, and so that was really great. Mm. And as I said, it was really, really great. I came back by way of New York City and heard my younger sister. She gave a concert there, and then I came back to Gloucester and went back.
Well, now where did she? She's a professional pianist,
organist, pipe organ.
Oh, where did she give the concert?
It was at a big Catholic church, St. Ignatius Loyola.
Okay.
We are not Catholics, but anyway.
No, but she obviously is a first-rate musician.
Oh, yeah. It was part of the American Guild of Organists convention.
Oh, really?
And so she gave four concerts, and every day she had a different audience.
Oh, that must have been exciting.
Yeah, I went to the first concert, and my mother went to the third concert. And then we had cousins from Connecticut, and they went to the final concert. And also the local church organist, who knows my sister, Barbara Bruins, she went to the final concert. So, anyway.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. Hey, thank you very much. I'm going to have to sign this program off. I think we're just about coming to the end of time.
Jeez, it's almost 5 o'clock.
That's right. It is almost 5 o'clock. Warren, it's good to talk with you. Welcome back to Gloucester. And thank you for the card from Montana. Anyway, it's been a fun week. I don't know why I'm saying it's a fun week. I'm sort of sounding like I'm saying goodbye forever, and I'm not. We'll be back tonight at the 11 o'clock. We'll have some interesting guests. We're going to talk about about Warren and his trip to Montana, about the Old West and Wild Bill Hickok and a whole lot of stuff like that. Anyway, a lot of interesting guests over the next couple of days, including some games Bob Hernandez, who's an inventor of some game shows and stuff, will do that and give away some games on Sunday night. On behalf of Tom Howie, the Tony Nesbitt, the lovely Marilyn Gorelnick, I'm Norm Nathan.
Indeed you are. I put this preview out on Patreon. Just another reason to join. And this was a nice surprise at the end of the tape, and I had to share it with you all. Anyone recall John Scott and the Yankee Magazine feature? Now, if I heard him correctly, he's talking about beach voles, which is perfect for the nuttiness we bring you each week. It's a bit upcut, but the majority of it is here.
69, taxonomists downgraded the beach vole to a subspecies of the meadow vole. Then later that century, the beach voles were almost wiped out by domestic cats on the island. Well, today, the island's vole population seems to be holding steady at several thousand, and recent data has restored its status to a full-fledged species, Microtus brurii. Well, frankly, biologists are baffled by the vole population. Robert Trameron of the Boston University says that the meadow vole populations follow a cycle. They expand very quickly, reach a maximum, and then crash. Beach voles are expected to behave the same way, but they don't. Must be that laid-back island living keeps those stress levels in check. Well, I hope you like to learn about the vole, as I did. If you'd like to learn more about New England, now that you know about the beach voles, visit Yankees Island on the Internet at www.newengland.com. I'm John Scott from Yankee Magazine with The Yankee Report for WBZ News Radio 1030.
The credits are all well-deserved, so strap yourself in as we close the vault and leave this world a little sillier than we found it. For Michael Medved, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, Swamp Women, Unspecial Effects, the Golden Turkey Awards, the Australian Jazz Quartet, Dave Brubeck, Jerry Mulligan, Carmen McRae, George Ween, Arnie Ginsberg, The Adventure Car Hop, Friday Afternoons at Storyville, the Teenage Jazz Club in Boston with John McClellan, The Top Shelf, Stephanie Saltman, George Shearing, Alan Dawson, Ray Santisi, Simply Sid, Brother Sid, and Symphony Sid. Norm's friends, Mike and Melissa from Upper Montclair, New Jersey, where nobody else lives. Norm's real name, Sahib Moskowitz. Time wearing into one's soul. Crochet Doilies, Attleboro, Massachusetts. Necking and sparking. Shucks. Pillow Fights, the dreaded new studio issues. Jack Hart's Traffic Empire. Milking the Story, Traffic Puns. Marie Kravitz. Norm's Lyrical Spontaneity. The Dueling DJs, Bob Clayton and Norm Prescott. Sam Zalsenheimer. The Dayton, Ohio Shopper's Guide. The Samson Midgets of Walla Walla, Washington. Rerouting One's Mind. Shirley Temple's arch nemesis, Sybil Jason. Epson Fupa, the bald equivalent of Shirley and Sybil. Big Bad John. Words that rhyme with chicken. Mohawk Rugs, Lucky Pup, The Muppets, Sandy Macy, The Saugus Dump, Nat Hentoff, Falcone Pianos. Streeter Stewart, Arch McDonald, John Scott, Yankee Magazine, Marilyn Gorelnick, Tom Howie, Jack Hart, and the 38th State Total Idiot, as well as the apex of Boston broadcasting, Norm Nathan, I'm Tony Nesbitt. And for the love of all things holy, please don't eat the biscuits!